Welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is Craig.
This is Tony.
And we're sitting here in the middle of the Queen Street Mall, busker in tow.
That's in Brisbane.
And we're here with Rachel Tempest Wood. How are you doing, Rachel?
Great. And yeah, thanks for noticing that I've just made a little new addition to my notes. So, cheers.
There you go. Yeah, I looked at it.
We notice everything.
Yeah, we've got to get this right when we start along. So, you originally hail from Wellington?
That's right. Yeah, now I'm in Wellington with Nomad 8.
So you've come across the ditch to...
I've just come for the weekend just to wander around and enjoy beautiful Brisbane and get some sunshine. It's fantastic.
Well, agile people coming to town, Tony. We can't let them...
We can't let them sneak away without an interview, that's for sure.
That's it. So we just caught up to say hello and we thought we'd turn the podcast on. So excuse us, we're in the Brisbane Queen Street Mall with people walking backwards and forwards.
And we needed a female replacement for Renee, right?
We could always do it. No, I shouldn't say that. Yes, we needed a replacement for the day for Renee.
We love you, Renee. We love you. We really do.
All right, so tell us a little bit about you, Rachel, like, for people who don't know you. I mean, you... I've sort of known you for a little while, but we actually met in person at Dan North Workshop, and
we met at Alyssa Adkins and
Michael Spade's
course.
The coaching workshop.
And it took a couple of lightning bolt moments before Rachel realised that I was Tony from the Agile Revolution.
You're
doing that annoying voice. Where do I know that from?
Yeah, yeah. That really nasty little man.
So tell us about your Agile journey, Rachel. What do you? How'd you get started in this whole caper?
How do I get started? I got started through the pain of being a project manager, a PMI-based project manager, as a lot of people do.
And yet she's such a nice person.
Yeah. What's going on there? Project manager is a deprecated role in a living agile environment.
Well, quite a scrub it is anyway.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, I never did quite fit in very well. I was actually working for a publishing company who were transitioning over to doing digital projects, and I was brought in as a digital advisor / project manager. I was put through the extensive, massive PMI kind of, cabin course, etc. And already things started to kind of not feel right. I started to work with clients and try and get digital projects through, and just nothing was working. It was just like, couldn't get things through, clients were constantly changing their mind, clients wanted to be heavily involved, etc. So I decided to go looking for a new way to bring that to my company, and I went and joined a mentorship program and ended up working with Anthony Bouvier, who's now my colleague at Nomad Man 8. So sort of he kind of helped spark me on the agile journey. And then just had a succession of different sort of roles in which I just tried by myself to kind of bring agile in, bring Scrum in, and in a kind of a very sort of messy kind of way, sort of have found my way through to coaching.
Did you come from a Prince 2 or PMI background at all?
PMI, I'm actually PMI qualified.
All right.
We won't hold that against you.
No.
It's all right.
Still a nice person.
Yeah, still a nice person.
Yeah. No,
it's all right.
But it also sort of joined up with a lot. Like, I spent years as a digital artist. I actually trained in theatre. I've done lots of things where I've been quite collaborative, worked really collaboratively, and so it sort of just made a lot of...
Just made common sense, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to ask you a question about PMI, because one of the things we get is a lot of project managers, tell us that, we can't do this because that goes against everything we've learned. How do you see the PMI? It's sold as a methodology, but really it has to be just an awesome toolkit of stuff you can use, right? And it's still some of it has, a lot of it's applicable in an agile space.
I think agile and PMI are completely different mindsets. Like, when I was a PMI project manager, I was told, you are the CEO of your project, you're completely responsible, and everything sort of rests on you. And I think it tends to bring out really bad behaviours in people because of that. Different people respond differently to that level, that type of stress.
But that's because in that situation you were following the methodology to the book, as opposed to the things that are in the PMI toolkit. The resources are actually still, in a lot of cases, part of what a project manager has to do. I mean, you still have to do resourcing. You still have to do. So you have to, I think one of the things that we kind of miss that the skill set of a project manager, you still have to get that from somewhere. Agile doesn't really help you with that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. But I think agile encourages better behaviours. Like, there's a lot more models for how to go about doing that in a way which is, you know, better for people generally.
We don't disagree with you there.
And the way I look at it, you know, there's 9 core competencies generally of a project manager, right? And all of those competencies used in the right way.
What other competencies of a project manager, Tony?
I can start listing them off. But you know, it's around reporting and it's around.
And we just lost the recording. We missed him rolling through the 9.
You went to sleep, is what he's trying to say.
Edit.
But the bottom line is, they're useful if they're used in the right way.
I've just been a week at with people talking about Prince and Prince 2 and iTalk.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm still fine.
Is that time you'll get back? Will you ever get that time back?
Well, there's a lot of talk in there about making agile work, and you know, that's a topic for another podcast. But I think one of the things that kind of hit me though is that these people still actually have a. They needed somewhere to kind of get to be with their people and get that core skill set. And, you know, so I think you hit the nail on the head. So the behaviour is the thing that's the driving factor. It's to be a software developer, you just don't go learn agile. You got to learn software development. I mean, you got to go somewhere to learn project management. And hopefully, the PMI and Prince 2 over time will continue to evolve that and make that.
Yeah, I don't know. I used to go to a lot of sort of PMP type networking events, and I'd go to agile events. And I did, you know, agile people are better looking and better dressed, you know? It's just like, it was just, I did notice sort of a real difference in the way that people...
Thank you for that. Yeah, I'll take that on.
I was like, these are my people.
This is a guy wearing a shirt and t-shirt and jeans. Still about Wellington. So you're based in Wellington. You guys have an awesome agile community there in Agile Welly.
Oh, yeah. Great bunch.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about Agile Welly.
About Agile Welly. I'm not part of Agile Welly, but
You're a regular contributor and
absolutely. Some of my Nomad colleagues, people that run.
So Sandy, Agile Sandy. Welly.
Sandy does. Mike Lowry did until recently. Anthony Bouvier. There's always really high quality speakers going through there. Everyone who goes along is incredibly appreciative of everything that's been.
So the thing always gets me about Wellington is that it's such a small city. I mean, it's not even 500,000 people. It's it's a bit short of that. And you compare West Sydney and Brisbane here with 1.5 million people. We can't get people to come to an agile meetup to save our life here.
Really?
We have a lot of trouble trying to get one off the ground and moving.
Yeah. And the one that runs here has a lot of trouble getting speakers and stuff. Whereas there's always high content. There's always people coming through. There's a real buzz. For the couple of meetups I've been there, do you get a sense of what the secret might be? Because it's a very government town as well.
I was going to say, I think there's a lot of struggle. I think there's a lot of people who are working in government, and government is an incredibly difficult place to do agile. I've been involved with teams within government, and I probably will in little pieces in the future, but it's incredibly hard. So I think there's a lot of people that are working in really difficult environments, and they just really need to come along and kind of, I don't know, get
let it out.
Get a little burst of, you know, kind of positivity and, belief.
So where is the majority of the work happening then in Wellington? I mean, if it's not, I mean, there is still work happening in the government, but is it large corporates that are keeping the work running? Or
there's lots of good stuff happening in terms of banks.
So BNZ.
Yeah, there's all sorts of people. Like one of my colleagues was working recently over the hill in the Wairarapa, which is in the country with a whole section of the farming community who are building this incredible big piece of farming software.
Excellent.
So it's not just, you know.
Yeah, it's very diverse from the sound of that as well.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, you've got some of the poster childs, people like Trade Me and those kind of guys as well, right?
Yeah, Trade Me, Snapper, Xero.
Yeah, so people who don't know, Trade Me is like an eBay for like a local eBay, really.
Yeah,
for,
and for,
for people worldwide, as opposed to local gum trees for Australians.
So it sells jandals.
Yeah. It has some.
And sheep? They sell sheep?
No, I stayed away from it, Craig.
No, they do. They do everything. They do auto, they do real estate, they do online dating. They're just like, I think they have something like 30 or 40% internet traffic.
There's some interesting stuff which some of your colleagues have been talking about in relation to trade. And then you got Snapper, which Sandy, who we've spoken to before on this podcast, spent a bit of time with. And they're the guys who do kind of that electronic payment.
Yeah.
You know, very early kind of,
Now, before we go any further, guys, I'm going to have to love you and leave you because this is a lunchtime interview.
It is indeed.
So I want to say to Rachel, thank you very much for having lunch with us and deigning to be on the podcast. And I'll leave you in the gentle and careful hands of one Craig Smith.
And then, of course, you've got other organisations as well. I mean, you've seen mentioned people like the banks. So the New Zealand banks are interesting, right? Because a lot of them are owned by Australian counterparts, yet they seem to be a lot more progressive than a lot of the Australian banks as well, from what I can determine.
Yeah, I'm doing some coaching at the moment in a bank, and it's interesting. It's almost like Agile has... I'm sort of working with BNZ, and Agile's got... They're already quite established. Mm. So now they're actually trying to take things to the new level. So things are not just happening at the team level. It's all about developing tribe consciousness. It's about kind of actually taking it through into the sort of the upper echelons of the business and making it sort of more total. So yeah, there's definitely levels of maturity occurring in Agile practice there.
Mm. And what sort of things are sparking your attention at the moment? I mean, you're a well-read person. What types of things are got your interest in the Agile community right now?
So much. My head just explodes. You know, it's just like, you know, I frequently sit down and try and make little mind maps to kind of contain all of that. But I'm kind of looking forward to Boiko Adzik is going to be coming over to Agile New Zealand in the next...
In a few weeks,
yeah. So I'm really looking forward to doing...
I'll have to sync on that because I'm going to his two-day workshop in Melbourne. So.
Oh, right, yes. Well, I'm going to do both his workshops. I'm going to do the Speak by Example just because I've read the book. It's really hard to keep it all in your head, and I've sort of practiced it a bit, but I'd really like to sort of learn from the master and get those sorts of nuances. But I'm particularly interested in the impact mapping.
He's not doing that one this time around in Australia, unfortunately, but yeah, impact mapping is one of those. It's actually one of the things only just recently I kind of reread it again. I read it when it first came out.
Right.
And kind of went, I can maybe see a use for this. And only just recently somebody was talking to me and I had this brainwave about a lot of different uses for, you know, maybe where I'm not using it effectively. So.
Yeah, and as a communication tool and as for ways to, like I was talking to someone recently and they were really frustrated with the fact that they had no analytics strategy. I thought, hang on a minute. And I can just see how it could actually be abstractly applied to lots of different situations.
Mm.
Yeah, as a tool. Yeah.
And he's got his new book coming out about how to split stories, which is kind of... It's one of these guys who kind of seems to put his toe into a whole bunch of different things. So I think even just generally just talking to him would be a very, very interesting thing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to see if I can line him up for a podcast at some point. So watch his space if we can narrow him down in the corridor somewhere.
Well, maybe you should come over to New Zealand to do the impact mapping workshop then.
Maybe I should. I didn't get a talking slot at the conference this year, so that kind of put that idea to rest. But it looks good. I mean, they've run an Agile conference for the last couple of years in New Zealand. It's kind of been a little bit Microsoft focused, and this year it's looking. I think Surety's kind of stepped up a little bit and taken the lead on it. But it seems to be a lot of interesting people, I guess, at this conference. Isn't it?
It's still
very New Zealand focused, but.
Be interesting to see. I haven't been to any of the Agile New Zealand's or the Australian ones, so it'll be interesting to see who comes along to that.
Excellent. So you got Goiko coming out, and what are some of the other interesting things that challenges, I guess, that you're facing right now?
The challenges that I'm facing.
Is adoption? When you go in and coach an organisation, I mean, you mentioned you're one of the banks, for example, but I'm seeing a lot of people thinking that they're kind of on the path, but really, you know, there's a lot of Scrum butt or Agile butt going on, and so the adoption hasn't still really reached out of IT, and that's really what's slowing the whole thing down.
I think the thing that I've been working on mainly recently, I really enjoy designing retrospectives. That's a really big thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I do is actually go into organisations and go into a situation where someone's done like a project and they bring me in as a consultant, and I have like half a day or, you know, 3 hours, 4 hours kind of thing, and I work with them, you know, take them through an entire journey kind of thing. And over time I've become really kind of interested in, and because I put a lot of energy into kind of to sort of designing those sort of facilitation experiences, I've always just assumed that everybody else does. And as I've been going through my coaching journey, I've started to see that as a bit of a gap.
So facilitation in general?
Facilitation and just people being really creative in that sort of facilitation space, and really kind of understanding how to use it as a tool ongoingly.
If I go to another retrospective, which is just post-it notes on a wall in three columns, I think I'll... I think I'll scream.
I've never ever done that retrospective, I'm proud to say, ever. It would never have occurred to me to have done it, and now as I become more experienced, I understand why instinctually that kind of doesn't really work. It doesn't sort of really give
that mechanism. Well, it's the 101, right? And it's probably because you come from a different background, but the 101 is, you know, we teach people in a stand-up to say three things. We teach them in a retrospective to answer three things. Like, you got to teach somebody what the point of a retrospective is. The problem is they latch onto that and they go, in my Agile course, I learned that I put things in three columns. It's like, yeah. No, you missed the point. When we taught you about retrospectives, we were teaching you to just get together and talk about continuous improvement. I don't care how you do it.
Yeah, and being creative about creating exercises or games, which are basically just mechanisms to sort of crack people's brains open and get people thinking creatively, get them outside of
just
their
just give us an example. I'm intrigued now. Give me an example of I'm sure you've got 100, and maybe that means that there's another 99 podcasts to go, but tell me one way that recently that you've used that's different about how to run a podcast, how to run a retrospective.
One way that's different, like in relation to sort of like,
and when I say different, and then probably each one sounds different because it's not just three columns on a wall. So how do you facilitate one?
How do I facilitate one? I always use Esther Darby's kind of model.
Mm-hmm.
And I generally go
from the one from the book, you mean?
The one from the book. So that's like the, you know, the census stage and sort of gather data, generate insights. I see it as very much kind of like a flow or a sort of an arc. I will tend to go in and do a targeted retrospective, either sort of request from the group that they choose something or, you know, sort of go in. And I never just do one game, I generally do two games that kind of merge and mash a couple of different things together.
So when you say targeted, you'll go in and actually make sure that you're on a theme rather than just...
I think sometimes it's emergent, but I think it's about actually sitting back and looking at what the dynamics are, what's actually occurring amongst the team and what's been going on over the last couple of weeks. Just getting support, or if I'm coaching and I'm sort of coming in, just sort of interviewing people and trying to find out what those kind of things that need to be brought to the surface so that we can see them, so that everyone can then sort of...
Yeah, and you're right, it's a good point when you come in as a coach. The first thing you've got to do as a coach is just come in and just shut up and observe and ask lots of questions and, you know, to try and get to the heart of it, because people don't typically come up and go, here's my problem. They kind of know they need some help, but that's about as much as they know. And they actually have the answers themselves, so they just need to often just stand back and, you know, take a good look at it or tweak something. So the retrospective format is a great thing to do when you finally get those insights to get people together and go, now let's sort it out. But you mentioned a couple of games. So what sort of games would you then play?
I'm about to do one tomorrow, actually.
Okay.
I'm working with 35 people, and we are going to be doing the classic airplane factory game.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where you work with various teams, and they have need to make... They're sort of competing, I guess, but they're making... series of paper planes, and then that you give them a really inefficient process in which to do it, and then they do several rounds as they sort of improve their process. This is like the Kanban group.
What do they learn from that? Is it because they're new to lean and new to continuous improvement, or
so basically this is like a series of they're called clans actually, as opposed to teams or squads, who actually work as a tribe. They're pretty good in their process. So the purpose of this one is I've adapted it. I've added sort of like a whole another level of kind of rules and interaction to the game, so that they will be actually trying to resolve it from looking at it from a sort of a tribe consciousness as well as a sort of clan consciousness. So it's also to do with the way that the work will be flowing down from the product owners through to the BAs. They have a whole lot of different types of paper planes that they can possibly draw on. There's like three different levels. It's incredibly complex.
Okay.
But basically we have basic, intermediate and advanced level planes. There's five different designs that they can choose from inside of each of those. So basically I've introduced huge amounts of complexity, which is going to mean that people have to very quickly sort of choose exactly which is the best way to go in order to achieve these particular sort of quotas.
So whether they produce or not is then going to open the discussion as to what they could have done differently? Or
the product owners need to make some decisions. The clans will all be different sizes, so the BAs and the product owners are going to have to be talking with the teams quite intensively to work out, you know, is it better to sort of, for instance, learn a new design that's more complex, so and which are worth, which is worth more money, in order to,
But the point is, I guess, at the end of it, is to open up the discussion as opposed to the traditional playing game, which is almost like an eye opener to go, "Oh crud, our quality wasn't very good, and our process from end to end is not great. How do we fix it?" Versus this one, where you've got people who understand these things a lot more. But one of two things I tend to find when you run these games: either all that goes out the window because everyone just, you know, dives in and, you know, tries to figure it out, or they actually don't think about the implications of why they chose one design over another.
Yeah, so what we'll do, I'm sort of setting it up so that we're kind of mimicking the process that they're going through at the moment. There's some of the clans at the moment are feeling like they're not getting the diversity of work in terms of the way that the work is flowing through. So the idea of the game is to create like sort of like an abstract representation of what they're doing in their own process, but because it's abstract, they can just get on and do it. Then we'll go through and have a retrospective or actually review it, and then we can look at redesigning the actual process they're going through at the moment themselves. And hopefully some of the things that might have come out abstractly and people have learned through the sort of the abstract process, as opposed to trying to think about your own work in which, you know, you've got things mixed up, you've got emotions and politics and relationships and that sort of thing, right? Abstracting it out, the learnings will hopefully rise to the surface, and then we can actually, you know, apply those to actually redesigning the very real process that they're going through.
So, well, sounds like a lot of fun, and we'll have to check back in with you to see to see how it goes in. But I guess it highlights the importance of games for learning. I mean, because you could just get up and start preaching to them about this looks wrong and that looks wrong, but they're a really good way of getting people to stand back and think about things and, as you say, then apply it to their real context.
I'm a little bit nervous about it, actually, and that's kind of what gives me my kick, you know? I haven't run this game in this way with such a large group. There's lots of things that could go wrong. There's lots of things that could come up. There's all sorts of stuff, you know?
I find the best the fallback mechanism is just know where the nearest pub is and just go.
Yeah,
we finished early. Let's points on me.
I really don't think that we can fail. Like, I think lots of interesting stuff is going to come out, and it's going to be chaotic. But if we can just get one or two things that we can take into the sort of the retro part of the process, then that's going to. But as well as people having fun and getting together and, you know, a good time. So yeah.
That sounds awesome. Well, you're back on a plane to Wellington, so we won't hold you up too much longer. So we've already lost Tony off to his he's off to go and facilitate something or other after lunch. So, yeah. Rachel, if people want to find out more about you or learn about what you do, where will they find you online?
You can find me on the Nomad 8 website.
So nomad8.com.
Yeah. I'm also on Twitter. If you search for Rachel Tempest, Space Wood, or I'm at RJ Tempest.
Cool. We'll put some links in the show notes to that as well. It was great catching up with you, Rachel. Great to, you know, as you to reach out and say hello as you're passing through Brisbane, and look forward to talking to you soon.
Cheers.
Bye.